Welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. It's the 2nd of August, 2018. I've got a half-formed discourse somewhere in the back of my brain, irritating me. It's really stimulated by the culture wars and all the to and fro of what you can say and what you can't say, and whether it's okay to offend people or not okay to offend people, and how some people ostensibly are too easily offended or other people are too willing to offend. And I suppose we see in all this the question of freedom of speech, the question of argumentum ad hominem, and questions of taboos in society. So what is the question here? What is the question? The question is, should free speech be permitted? First thing that jumps out at me from that question is, well, who's to do the permitting? By what authority do they do the permitting? Who's to say that whoever these permitters are should be the permitters? So immediately we understand public discourse as operating in a sphere of power or within an organisation which is a power dynamic, or which is a system of dominance, can we say? Because if somebody can permit me to say some things but and forbid me from saying others, that is a power dynamic. That is a dominance. That is a dominance that's held over me by some entity or group of oligarchs or some institution or another. Now this in turn presumes they have some kind of powers of enforcement. So they send me to jail for saying the wrong thing, or take me to court and fine me, or just simply prevent the media which disseminate the public discourse from operating in certain ways, from saying certain things. Now, this isn't academic, because we do know that in the UK, for instance, there's such a thing as a D-notice, and I'm not sure whether this still works, but a D-notice basically forbids the press from reporting on certain incidents. And the usual excuse for slapping a D-notice from the government on to the press, the free press ostensibly, is an appeal to national security. So if there's some kind of stuff has been leaked from MI6 or something like that, or some secret government papers, that the government can prevent the press from printing it. So we've got these mechanisms that are in place that are part of the legal structure, that are part of the system of dominance which is our society. And we know that there are moves afoot at the moment to control Facebook and Twitter. I'm not a fan of either of those social media platforms particularly. I think the big tech companies are not friends of our liberty, particularly. They simply have too much power, too much wealth, too much power. So I'm not a fan. But the idea, at the same time, that the government can appoint some committee to tell us what's good reporting and what's bad reporting, strikes me as extremely dodgy and bound to go wrong. I suppose we need to bear in mind as well that in the current epoch, that the old mainstream media, which is generally owned by billionaires and therefore, despite certain degrees of editorial freedom, are organs of class propaganda for the most part. They are fading, they are being replaced by online media, and there is space there for independent people to raise their voice. Of course, whether that voice gets heard is another matter. If the ISPs or Google, for instance, decides to wade in and marginalise certain voices, well, that space is starting to get closed, and of course that is what's happening at the moment. That space is closing. So there is, I suppose, quite a serious culture war going on there over the ability to disseminate and to reach audiences with a whole range of ideas. And if we're going to have free speech, that'll be every kind of idea you can think of, including some pretty noxious ones and including some pretty stupid ones. If you've got free speech, you have to allow for the voices of stupidity, disinformation and the ill-informed. The other problem about freedom of speech is that it's in fact the whole problem of liberty per se, is that liberty can subvert itself. If you have complete liberty, if you have the free market and free capitalism, eventually you get oligopolies or even monopolies. You get, simply as a product of the way that system operates, you get concentrations of wealth and power. And if all the power in a society is flowing into one or two centres of power, it leaves everybody else powerless and not free, therefore. Because to be free, you have to have some power. You have to be able to do something. You have to have a sphere of operations. That partly shows us the way in which freedom and equality are embedded together as well. Of course, if you enforce equality, if you had a certain central power that was able to force equality, again, it would truncate some people's freedom. But because it would require them not to use their freedom to accrue wealth and power, which of course would attenuate the equality. So there's a kind of sense in which freedom can truncate itself, because it becomes freedom for some and at the expense of freedom for others, and that in a sense isn't freedom. I mean, there's quite a good chance that the disempowered will come and take your power and take your freedom, because the fact that the liberty had been colonised by one group or even just one person. It's a state of affairs which everybody who's left behind at some point is going to realise the nature of and find they don't like it. And you certainly see that freedom of speech could have results that nobody in their right mind would like. In other words, can you use your freedom of speech to incite violence? Can you use your freedom of speech to get people to do things that take the freedom off other people? If you were a great orator but were sort of ethically twisted, you might be able to use that oratory, for instance, to reinstitute slavery. You'd say, this is a good thing, this is what we need to do now. And you can imagine such a thing happening after some kind of catastrophic economic collapse. Now, I know this is a bit Mad Max and a bit sci-fi, but it's a thought experiment, so bear with me. All we need here is a technical possibility, and it's certainly technically possible for somebody to polemicise with sufficient skill and intensity, so that some state of affairs arises, certain some laws are passed that take the freedom from people, that reinstitute slavery or reinstitute apartheid or institute some kind of debt peonage or something like that. Even you might get a great orator at a time of national stress, comes along and convinces all the parliamentarians with his charisma and the speeches that he gives out and about in the country, and the speeches which, and the essays and polemics which he publishes in newspapers and magazines and online, and persuades the country and the legislature to bring in conscription. You know, well, the conscriptee has to go, or go to jail, or be killed. And so there's a way, I mean, this is an example that I'm just putting out here just to show that it's possible to use free speech to constrict the freedom of others. So, how do we get round that? And as you can see, and as I mentioned earlier, this is a conundrum that applies to liberty per se. Especially when we realise that liberty and equality do have this necessary relationship and entanglement with each other. They're kind of two threads in a knot. So there's a difficulty with this whole notion of freedom of speech. I mean, okay, let's say that we're constituting our utopia, and we want as much liberty as we can manage, and we want as much equality as we can manage, at least equality of opportunity and equality of worth. And you decided that you wanted freedom of speech. You thought that the free play of ideas, the free play of debate, was generally productive and useful for human society, and this was a way of stimulating the emergence of new creative possibilities for human beings, and that it was good in its own right. You were convinced of that, but you noticed that a completely unconstrained free speech could fuck everything up. It could fuck up the gains that you'd made to get to that utopian place in the first place. So what do you do? Well, okay, you say, well, there's a limit. But how'd you find the limit? Where'd you put the limit? And who's going to do it? Again, this comes back to this question, who's going to do it and who are they? It seems to me that these questions are unanswerable in any kind of solid, sloganising kind of way. There's no simple propositions going to get us out of the nitty-gritty work of figuring out what we want in fine detail, and figuring out the possibility of what we want in fine detail vis-a-vis what the taboos of our society are, vis-a-vis what we can say and what we can't say, vis-a-vis how we do the trade-off between the possible harm to society that could come from completely unconstrained liberty on the one hand, and the actual value of liberty per se on the other. Now, I have to say for myself, I like to be able to say what I want to say, and I do actually think that it's not such a terrible thing to insult people, or such a terrible thing to be insulted. I don't like it, but I don't care that much. The thing that bugs me is being misunderstood. You can call me a twat as much as you like, but I don't like being misunderstood, because I think I failed in the attempt to communicate, which is a sort of a bit of a core thing for me. Genetic, I suppose. But I do think Donald Trump's a twat, and all and his pals are complete idiots. And it's not like I would want to shut them up. But somehow, they've got themselves into a position where they've got their hands on the levers and their finger on the button. And it was a underhanded and not exactly truthful use of discourse, use of the power of free speech that got them there. By playing into people's prejudices, by playing the xenophobia card. And which by doing the whole Bernays propaganda game. So, fuck them, they're idiots. And similarly, our own pundits here in the UK, the commentariat for the most part, a kind of posh sounding dimwit. But that's how it works. They got the right accent, they can put a few sentences together, they can kind of inject some passion into their voice and do a sort of minor Hitler intensity performance, and people buy it. But the content's bloody shit. It's contradictory, it's not based on fact. Where there are ostensible facts, you dig around and they're not true. There's no sense of how we weigh narratives at all. That's a very, very shadowy area. There's a lot of name calling, a lot of polemics, and a lot of degradation of language in the process. Words like communist stop meaning what they mean. Socialist stops meaning what it means. Fascist stops meaning what it means. And a lot of useful technical terms get degraded to slogans. So I do think, again, my own personal weighing of this, even though I can't kind of keep revisiting it and puzzling over it, is that freedom of speech is worth the risk. And the idiots have to be included. And the really nasty motherfuckers have to be allowed as well. And I do question the notion that there's somebody who can legitimately be the permitter of free speech, be the police of our thoughts and our discourse. I mean, who the fuck are they? Is basically the question that I ask, and I don't see any legitimacy on the part of anybody to stop me from saying what I like. I do see the need for some kind of restraint when utterances can have real world effects and even catastrophic ones, even though, like, nobody like me isn't ever likely to be in a position where his words carry that much weight. I mean, I know what I would say as a desideratum. I would say as a desideratum that we do have lots of open debate, we have cultural debate. It's a little bit better than question time, these kind of popular things, where there's a bit more acumen, a bit more understanding of discourse per se, a bit more understanding of logic. And that where it's valued, when people have specialisms with the facts of that specialism at their fingertips, and the ability to verify what they've said. So that whole kind of standard gets raised up, and I think this starts obviously with the education system. So in my desired utopia, you would have massive encouragement to questioning, and right from the start of the educational process, questioning wouldn't be a forbidden. And I think in this way we have the possibility of using our collective intelligence at the moment it just produces this noise and clamour. We don't even know how to do it, particularly. We don't even know how to speak to each other as a community, as a world community. Now suddenly we've got at our disposal this means of spreading our words all over the planet, speaking to people all over the planet. And this is, again, I hope, this is what's going to happen, is that this general intellect, as Marx called it, or the internet, does free itself from the control, the centralised control of the tech companies and the governments that are able to lean on them or bribe them or whatever, and it becomes far more decentralised. And I know a lot of geeky crypto anarchists and so forth, they're working on that, and it will come. The internet will be decentralised. The controlling power of Facebook, Amazon, Google, Apple, Microsoft will decline. It'll take some time because it's huge. See, Apple is set to become the first $1 trillion company, and Jeff Bezos of Amazon is now the richest man in the world. And he's got personal wealth of hundreds of billions, well, down 150 billion or something. But that empire will rise and it will fall. But the challenge will be even greater in some ways. But now we have this world stage, this great clamour of voices, this real Tower of Babel. And you think it's kind of crazy now. But I think we will learn, and I think we will have to learn how to do this stuff, how to talk to each other, how to argue, how to debate, how to draw conclusions, how to be willing to change your mind about something, how to understand the way our feelings, our utopias, our dreams, our desires, our wishes for our descendants are all entangled with every debate that we have, with every controversy that we encounter. So one hopes against hope, because the actual problems, as I say, are kind of really, really tricky and probably insoluble. Where is the cut-off point on freedom of speech? How do we counterbalance freedom and equality without getting them to sort of paralyse each other? I don't think there's any escape from really nuanced, detailed micro-examination of desires and of collective desires and of ideals and of values. No way out of that. And that's hard work. It's hard imaginative work. It's also hard cognitive work as well. The pure marriage of cognition and imagination. So what I've said so far raises another puzzle, and it's this. In the plea for a culture of questioning and for the education of children, the education of citizens, the formation of citizens, to be based on questioning, goes against a very popular idea that a society and a community should be organised through dogma. In other words, through certain ideas that are not questioned. This is how you get, a Christian country in the old days, or an Islamic country, and so forth. There's a dogma which is not questioned, which then forms the basis for the reasoning that produces the laws and the customs and the taboos and the forbiddens and the permitteds of a particular community, society. And there are plenty of people trying to make a case for this kind of thing. There's the belief abroad that you can't actually do anything without some kind of central, unquestionable, transcendental signifier like God or history or the good of the people. And this does require a certain enforcing, it requires a certain censorship, which says you do not go beyond this boundary with your inquiry. Outside that boundary you can inquire, you can do science, because it's kind of ethically neutral. And we can use the technology that results. We can make better weapons with it. So, there actually is a huge contestation at the core of what I'm recommending and suggesting and hoping for. There's also another problem, you know, when you say the education system should do X, Y or Z. And I've just asserted that we have an education system that encourages even young children to question and to learn how to debate and to learn logic and discourse and the tricks of rhetoric as well and how they all operate. But of course, who is to say that? Who is to determine the curriculum? And this brings us back to exactly the same question which I started with, you know, well, who is to say what I can say and what I can't say? Who is to say where I need to be censored and where I'm free? And who the fuck are they? And what's the justification for their position? Now, you might argue democracy. Well, maybe that would be worth trying. But nobody's really tried it. The idea that the great democracies are democracies is a bit ludicrous. In the case of the US, you've got, like, the parties have been bought by the wealthy and powerful few. You have the electoral college in the presidential election, which subverts a stronger democratic idea of a full popular vote. Trump didn't poll as many as Mrs. Clinton, though he won the election because of the electoral college system, which gives a vote, a certain number of votes to each state. The presidential election determines who goes to the electoral college. And democratic it ain't. You know, and the actual power and influence of the shadow government and the deep state, by which I mean the intelligence agencies and the military-industrial complex, respectively, is huge.
And I've got like a 98%
chance. It kind of renders people's votes sort of almost meaningless. In the UK, we've got an unelected second chamber. We've got the royal prerogative. The country actually performed war acts without reference to the House of Commons, which is where the elective representatives are. Not so long ago, a few months ago, demonstrating perfectly that the country's not in any way a democracy. The institution of the Privy Council, again, they pass laws just by reading a bill out to the Queen and the Queen saying that she agrees. Democratic? Hardly. I know that the members of the Privy Council are parliamentarians, but it's still fucking shady. The monarchy, royal charters giving unelected bodies power in certain sectors of the economy. So you can forget it. Maybe it would work if we had some kind of pure democracy that we could all get together and say, look, we don't want people saying kill all the blacks or kill all the lesbians or kill all the white men or whatever. You know, maybe we could stand up and say that. Maybe we could agree that in a kind of huge town hall discussion. We could say, well, okay, we're not going to do that because of the possible outcome. And maybe we could be grown up enough to say that we recognise debate and free expression as a very, very great good. And a great creative good that helps humanity to move forward and to prosper and to flourish, as well as simply survive. But that we have to learn how to do it, that we have to figure out how to do it, that we need to put effort and research into it, instead of just saying freedom of speech and then just calling each other cunts and twats all the time, and retards and libtards and trumptards and communists, fascists, even though sometimes it's true. It beats me how a communist has become a swear word, but it has. I suppose John McCarthy, his legacy actually still rolls on. And Kim Philby and so forth. Of course, Joe Stalin, he rolls on. The force of his myth rolls on. So I think it's a case of grow up or die. To be honest, regenerate or die, grow up or die. So there is something hangs by it. You know, culture wars, yeah, I very often say the fucking silly culture wars. And I do see that distractions, it would be great if we just got on with building beautiful things and help us to flourish. And that's certainly what I want to be doing, you know, to build and create, rather than have endless squabbles in the playground. But nevertheless, there is shit hangs by it, simply because words can turn into deeds. And deeds can turn into wars, and wars can turn into a wailing and a gnashing of teeth. And it's a pity whenever that shit goes down. It's a pity. Anyway, started out without much idea what I wanted to say. Well, I think I've come up with something that's got a certain shape to it. You may disagree, we can have a debate. So I'll sign off and thank you for listening.